I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Jerry Sandusky is in prison, convicted in 2012 of 45 counts of sexually abusing 10 boys. His case received national attention because of the enormity of his crimes, the role of Penn State, and questions about why it took the Attorney General's office 3 years to charge Sandusky. Attorney General Kathleen Kane had criticized her predecessor, Tom Corbett, when she ran for office, saying that politics slowed his office's investigation. She appointed Jeffrey Moulton to investigate the investigation, and that report was released on Monday. It said politics was not an influence, but that mistakes were made. Kane essentially upstaged her press conference, alleging on Monday that two more victims were abused during the three-year investigation, criticizing the prosecutors for not being more aggressive. She has since walked back some of those charges. Well, here to walk us through this story is Charles Thompson. He covers government for the Harrisburg Patriot News. And Charlie Thompson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. I should add that Jeffrey Moulton declined our invitation to be on the show. He apparently is on vacation. And Kane's office called this morning to say the Attorney General would not be able to join us. But we're happy to have you, Charlie Thompson, as I said, to kind of walk us through the twists and turns of this investigation. What was the point of the original investigation, this Moulton report? What did the Attorney General want to know?
Okay. Well, I think the context for this, if I can plunge into that, would be that, you know, obviously we had the child sex abuse scandal involving Jerry Sandusky, and I'm sure all your listeners know what a earth-shaking event that was in
Absolutely.
Pennsylvania culture. And, you know, the conviction came in. Actually, let's start with the charging of Sandusky in November of 2011. I mean, that set off such an uproar and such a chain reaction that led ultimately to, or quite quickly, to Joe Paterno being fired as the Penn State football coach, Graham Spanier being ousted as Penn State president. And, you know, the case turned on resulted in a fairly quick conviction of Sandusky. But what it left was quite a residue of rage in the Penn State universe, and that is a big universe in Pennsylvania. You know, our flagship university and of course, the culture that grew up around rooting for the Nittany Lions and Joe Paterno's, you know, white knight reputation among NCAA football coaches had all been turned on its head. And what Kathleen Kane read that and used it to her considerable advantage in her 2012 run for Attorney General.
Criticizing the governor.
Yeah, right. And basically she said that she was reflecting questions that she was hearing from people on the campaign trail about Corbett's role in this investigation and had he stage managed it so that it you know, was starved of resources or maybe even directly ordered it to be slowed so either he could rake in contributions from board members on the second mile or just keep the tinderbox of what was going to happen, what could have happened to Joe Paterno, you know, delay that until after the November 2010 election.
And Charlie, let me jump in here only because, and I appreciate the wanting to put this all into context because that matters a lot. But I'm also looking at the clock here. So taking that background and the frankly the allegations from Kathleen Kane that there was politics that delayed this investigation of Jerry Sandusky. What did the Moulton report conclude?
Well, the Moulton report. The four corners of the Moulton report seem to conclude that there were no direct political directions, at least let's put it this way. He says there was no evidence of that, that no evidence that Tom Corbett or anyone from the campaign was sending messages to the prosecutors that, you know, look, we got to go slow on this. And not even any direct evidence that it was just starved of resources. So Moulton has said, I can't bring charges on that point because I don't have any evidence to suggest it. It's not a surprise to people that were following the case, I don't think, because, you know, we've had a chance to ask that question of the governor many times, and the prosecutors that were working the case many times, and they've always said, you know, that's right. That's incredulous that people would suggest that. However, you know, we know that it was a question that was resonating in many people's minds, and I think, you know, Kathleen Kane is the elected attorney general, and she has a right to ask and probe that question on behalf of the people that she says were asking her about mm-hmm. it. And Moulton comes up with nothing on that front. So then
let me just stop you there. So what you're saying is that while the report says there's no evidence for this, it doesn't necessarily put this issue to rest for people either that want to believe it or perhaps even the Attorney General herself.
I think that's true.
Okay.
Because, you know, so many of the arguments around this are inflamed by emotions that I don't think the net effect of the report is, I don't think it's really changing people's minds one way or another. But so what the report became then was really a kind of an after action exercise on, hey, let's look at how this, let's analyze how this investigation was done and were there flaws that could be used to improve how we conduct these kinds of investigations in the future.
And I do want to get to all of that, but the report does talk about certain mistakes, or certainly raising questions about why Sandusky's home wasn't investigated sooner, why the investigators didn't talk sooner to campus and local police. So the report did raise some criticism of the investigation.
Yes, and those two were the most prominent criticisms. And the interesting thing about it is that Moulton, the author of the report, seemed to say that these guys missed chances to wrap up the investigation more quickly because, for example, they could have gotten information about Jerry Sandusky's 1998 investigation at the hands of the Penn State Police and the Center County District Attorney at the time over a Penn State shower room incident. In 1998, that case did not result in charges, but records were there, and had they had those records early on, the Corbett team's concern about going against a state icon like Jerry Sandusky with one witness and that case going badly because of the reservoir of goodwill surrounding Jerry Sandusky versus one, you know, nervous kid who's trying to erase everything we all thought we knew about Jerry Sandusky, not going well and resulting in an acquittal and blowing the case. If they had this 98 information, there were some clues in there that would have led rather directly to some other victims and indirectly to even more victims, and they feel like that concern would have been resolved. Sandusky could have been arrested much faster, and he would have been off the streets and not a risk to other kids for maybe the 2 years where, you know, from 2009 to 2011 where the investigation was progressing. The other point was the search warrant and why didn't you search his home sooner, because that too might have yielded these, when they did do a search warrant, they yielded lists of second mile participants that had asterisks that indicated that, right, you know, Sandusky was kind of scouting for kids that he was interested in, and photos of kids that he had, you know, taken out of the second mile programs and invited to cookouts at his home and taken to Penn State games and that sort of thing. So those were the major flaws that Moulton found. But the interesting thing about Moulton's report was he always did it in the context of the decisions that Corbett's team made were reasonable within the within the bounds of reasonable prosecutorial discretion. And what he means by that is, you know, Seth Williams in Philadelphia, Ed Marsico in Dauphin County, Kathleen Kane in Harrisburg as Attorney General, all have prosecutorial discretion to run their cases as they see fit. I mean, they're elected prosecutors, and when we elect them, part of the trust we're placing in them is, you know, okay, Attorney General Kane, we're trusting you to call the shots on these investigations.
And what Moulton said is that prosecutors have a certain kind of discretion where they might not all follow the same
exactly.
the same yeah. course of an investigation.
Yes. And he says that there's a case to be made that these guys, you know, if you bought into their strategy, there's a case to be made for doing things the way they did. Their strategy being, by the way, that they didn't want to bring a case until they could hammer Sandusky with multiple victims and show a continuing course of conduct. Kathleen Kane, on the other hand, had sort of taken this platform that if I was doing this investigation, I know how imperative it is to get pedophiles off the street quickly. They are notorious repeat offenders. The community continues to be at risk every day. This guy is out there, and this thing should have gone a lot faster. So she seized on the flaws or the questions that Moulton raised and said, you know, I feel that this should have been done differently.
And let me just jump in here, only because we have about 2 minutes before we have to say goodbye to you, Charlie. But there were a series of recommendations that came out of this report, and I think it's kind of gotten lost in all the what is actually in the body of the report, and also what Kathleen Kane did to, in a sense, upstage her press conference on Monday, which I'll talk to John Micek about. But what were some of the recommendations?
Yeah. Okay, well, I think the some of the ones that kind of jumped out at me were a proposal to change our state law so that the central registry of all child abusers would contain not only people who had been accused of a child abuse and that report was founded or resulted in criminal charges or civil action, but that registry now include, you know, those people who were investigated for a report of child abuse, but there was no indication that it actually occurred or that it wasn't proven, you know. And the reason for that is when they went to look for Sandusky in the 1998 case, never showed up, because if you are accused, you go on the registry, but you are expunged when the case is deemed not proven or not founded in the lingo of Child Protective Services law.
Right.
So, but if you keep, sometimes there are people who come into the system, they can't establish a definitive case against them, and then 5 years later they pop up again. 3 years later, they pop up again. And if it's expunged, nobody has a record to look back at the other cases.
And Charlie, I hate to do this.
You do it.
Yeah, I hate to do this to you, only because they're playing my song. We've got to end our conversation.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us today in Radio Times. Charles Thompson covers state government for the Harrisburg Patriot News. We will continue this conversation with John Micek, also from the Patriot News, waiting in the wings. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Allentown Symphony Pops supports WHYY and presents a tribute to Benny Goodman. Clarinetist Dave Bennett and his band come to town to relive the swing era, Saturday, July 12th at 8 p.m. Bennett's stage presence, knowledge of the dates and details of Goodman recordings, and his penchant for wire-rimmed glasses, spats, and double-breasted suits transport audiences back to the time and mood of Benny Goodman's swing era. For information, MillerSymphonyHall.org.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Our resident chef, Kathy Gunn, says this time of year is all about fish.
Not just fish.
Not just fish.
Summer fish.
What's the difference?
Well, it's interesting. You don't tend to think of something like fish and seafood as being seasonal, but in fact, it very much is.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the Museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Earlier this week, Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane's office released a report on the Jerry Sandusky investigation. The report, authored by former federal prosecutor Jeffrey Moulton, found that several critical mistakes were made along the way, but none were the result of political influence from then Attorney General and now Governor Tom Corbett. Joining us now is John Micek. He's editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and also Penn Live. And John, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And we are talking about the investigation of the investigation. To you, John Micek, does this Moulton report and the accusation of politics that played a role in the Sandusky allegations that Kane alleged when she was running for AG?
I think Governor Tom Corbett certainly hopes so. I mean, you know, in the press conference on Monday, Ms. Kane and Mr. Moulton were fairly unequivocal that no evidence showing that there had been any sort of slow walking in the investigation for political reasons, and in fact that then Attorney General Corbett had not made any substantive decisions in the course of the investigation, and that staffers would not have stood for any for politicking playing a role. But that said, I mean, that just I've had several people suggest that just because no emails were found doesn't mean that it was happening, and just because, you know, it's a conspiracy doesn't mean they're not out to get you. So I mean, at the end of it, the people who think Tom Corbett played politics will still think Tom Corbett played politics. They will think Kathleen Kane played politics. Will still think Kathleen Kane played politics. But for official purposes of the record, yeah, it does take the political question off the table.
Let's talk a bit about what Kathleen Kane alleged on Monday, and this was after Moulton essentially released the report and talked about the report, saying that two people were at risk because of this long investigation, and that two people had come forward about 6 months or so into this investigation, basically saying that the time it took to do this investigation put two people at risk.
That's true, although Ms. Kane has sort of walked back her remarks in the last day or so. According, she said that two people reported Sandusky abuse in the fall of 2009, so months after predecessors in the office began investigating him. But in a statement on Wednesday, Kane actually confirmed that one of the victims from fall of 2009 is the person who's been identified as victim number 9 of 10 at the criminal trial. So one of the two people she was talking about sort of was already part of this investigation.
But at the same time, four members of her office issued a statement saying it is absolutely true and factual that evidence exists that two individuals who allege they were victimized into the fall of 2009. It is shameful for others to re-victimize these individuals by denying their existence. So that came out from four members of Attorney General Kathleen Kane's office, and then she says no, that one of these actually was identified.
Yeah, I mean it is troubling, and it raises brand new questions. I mean, my colleague Charlie Thompson would probably be able to speak to that a little bit better than I. But it does go to sort of the turmoil that's in Ms. Kane's office right now.
Turmoil in what way?
Yeah, you'll have Frank Fina on in a couple of minutes, and I mean he's raised questions about this and the report and the purpose of the report. And we've heard for some time now about staff turnover in Ms. Kane's office, about problems with employee morale, and you know certainly with these four people coming forward, that doesn't help.
Well, and this is an issue, an office. I mean, it's a political office, but it also has to deal with, you know, these important issues, and it seems nothing more important than allegations of child sexual abuse.
Absolutely.
So where does this sort of put, and I'm thinking in some more political terms, but does this does this put this issue to rest as and I hate to make this horrible segue, as Governor Corbett then runs for re-election?
Well, as I wrote on Monday, in a strange way, this actually opens another can of worms for Governor Corbett. So we've taken the question of slow walking off the table, right? They put to bed whether or not politics was playing a role in this. On the other hand, though, she raised questions about the management of the investigation, about why people weren't talked to, why the grand jury wasn't utilized in the correct way. And to my way of thinking, that raises questions about Governor Corbett's oversight of then Attorney General Corbett's oversight of the office and his management. I mean, I asked her straight out on Monday if the report painted a picture of an Attorney General who was properly managing his office or someone who was out of touch with day-to-day affairs. And she sort of dodged and said, well, you can ask 50 people about that and get 50 different opinions, and I can only tell you the way I've done it. And ultimately, that will be up to the voters to decide, you know, the very same voters in November who will be mm-hmm. voting for Governor Corbett. So in a way, she sort of, you know, took the politics thing off the table but dropped his management issues in his lap instead, which potentially is more troublesome. I think voters can handle politicking by a politician, but they're more concerned about his fitness, his or her fitness to lead every day.
But it's interesting that this all comes on the heels of a sting operation that she called off, an operation that allegedly found some elected officials on tapes, you know, taking money, taking presents from an operative. She said this was not prosecutable, would not stand up in court. How do you sort of reconcile these two decisions by the Attorney General?
That's a fantastic question. I'll leave it up to her to reconcile them. But I mean, certainly it was a controversy she did not need, and raised questions about her own fitness. And you know, one can never accuse politicians of having their own glass houses in order before they cast stones. Certainly, but it did derail the Kathleen Kane political express, and she's already being talked about for Senate and bigger and better things. And she may now have to worry about winning a second term should she choose to run for one.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. And I have to say, John, we don't have the greatest phone, but my fingers are crossed we're going to keep you on the line as long as we can. And again, okay. What can I say? It's 2014 and we don't have a good phone line. But nonetheless, John Meissen, our guest editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and for Penn Live. And we asked him to join us to, in a sense, respond and give us his thoughts about this report released earlier this week by the Pennsylvania Attorney General's Office, Kathleen Kane. It was a report into the Jerry Sandusky investigation, which took 3 years. There were questions raised about whether politics played a role. The report seems to say that did not play a role, although the report did raise some concerns about mistakes that might have been made. And we're curious about if you've been following this case and what you make of this report and if there are some lessons learned. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And John, I'd like to talk about some of the mistakes that were identified by the Moulton report, and also to get your response to that. One, that it took too long to search Sandusky's home. Can you sort of flesh that out for us, what the report said?
Yes, let me just pull up the correct chapter and verse here. I mean, the short form was that they searched his home, I think, in 2011, and should have done it in 2009.
Right.
And that was sort of an inexplicable delay, and that Sandusky knew that he was under the microscope for that period of time, and they couldn't account for that delay. And it's one of those sort of questions they raised about the conduct of the investigation.
And again, it's just one of those weird head scratchers on why they chose to do that, and it's kind of unclear why they chose not to.
And we should say to our listeners that the investigation began in 2008, and then
that's right.
And then Jerry Sandusky was arrested in 3 years later in 2011.
2011, that's correct.
In 2011. So the question is, what was going on during those three-year period? And one of the questions raised was, why did it take investigators almost 2 years to actually go into the Sandusky home and to look at his files? And report talks about the failure to search is difficult to defend. And we'll be talking hopefully with Frank Fina to get his response to that. But that seemed to be one of the issues, John, that this Moulton report pulled out as a question about why this took so long.
Yeah, I mean, there was that. There are questions about why there wasn't better interagency communication between you know, law enforcement and social services, about why the case sort of laid fallow for about 5 months sitting on someone's desk. And you know, they concluded the grand jury was proper, but you know that it might not have had the resources that it needed to do its job early on. All sorts of just very strange questions about the management of the case. And then Mr. Moulton said on Monday, you know, serves if nothing else as an object lesson and a worthwhile exercise in going back and evaluating how these cases are conducted. Because as you said, Marty, there's nothing more important than protecting the welfare of kids.
Well, and there were some questions also raised about why there wasn't more urgency about getting police records, whether from State College or from local police. And in fact, the report said this was the single most single most productive step, because apparently that revealed something like four victims of Jerry Sandusky.
That's right.
Do you think this is a case that people are still paying attention to in Pennsylvania, or do you think they are? You know, people are done with this issue. They have moved on. As you sort of read the tea leaves, John.
Well, I have to go. I can go no further than the Twitter widget in the corner of my desktop here at the Capitol Bureau for Penn Live, and it's still being very actively discussed. And there is a contingent of people out there for whom this is still a huge issue. And It may have gone fallow in the rest of Pennsylvania, down there in Philadelphia, where your listeners live. But out here in central Pennsylvania, where you know Penn State football is still very much a secular religion, is still something that's still very much being talked about.
And this is, I mean, we're talking about the Jerry Sandusky investigation, but there are other court cases, I guess, sort of in the works, are going to be coming online, so to speak, coming up soon. Do you know what the process is there, John? Have you looked at that?
Yeah, I mean, we're still waiting for those three former Penn State administrators, to go to trial. That's Tim Curley, the former AD, Mr. Schultz, the former VP of Finance, and, of course, Graham Spanier, the former president of Penn State University. Those cases are all still in the pipeline and have yet to make their way through the judicial system. And they, of course, have been accused of conspiring about covering this whole thing up.
And I wonder, too, about even on Penn State, since you're closer to Penn State than we are here in Philadelphia, is this an issue that's playing out among the trustees? Is this, you know, and even, I mean, you know, is, we go, no, go ahead, go ahead.
No, I mean, this is like issue, I had those Board of Trustees elections a couple of months ago, and, you know, this whole thing was like issue number one, reform of the board, and to a lesser extent, clearing the name of Joe Paterno and reinstating his statue. And it was, to me, it was a little bizarre, like, what precedence that took over, you know, the practical stuff that affects students, you know, tuition and campus rape and alcohol abuse on campus, all the real sort of real crisis-y stuff that hits kids where they live every single day in college life. And I was up at Penn State to talk to some journalism classes back in April, and that's when the whole thing was blowing up with the new coach and some of the allegations at his former campus. And you know, the alumni were going crazy about it, and all the grown-ups were going crazy about it, and I'm talking to college kids about it, and it was so far removed from their actual daily lives. In a weird way, this Sandusky thing is a thing that's being litigated at the alumni and Board of Trustees level. I mean, keep in mind, Marty, it's been, what, 3 years since this happened come November. I mean, that's like a whole lifetime for some college kids. You have new kids at Penn State who weren't even on campus when this whole thing happened, and it's kind of remote to them, yet, you know, the adults and the alumni are still litigating and still hashing it over, which is not to minimize the importance of sexual abuse cases, obviously.
Sure.
But it's weird that there's these two alternate realities.
Well, and even just the cost to Penn State, has anyone tallied that up yet, John?
The cost for
Literally just the money that's being paid out or having to be paid out.
Oh, for the litigation, it's in the millions of dollars now. I haven't checked recently, but it's like some ridiculous multi-million-dollar number.
Is this also an issue that's playing out in any way in the legislature, or is it kind of happening in more because it's in the Attorney General's office?
The scandal itself. I mean, the legislature took up a bunch of child protection bills. That process began right after the scandal broke, and I remember lawmakers standing in the Capitol Rotunda in November of 2011, calling for changes in mandatory reporter rules and statutes of limitations and that kind of thing. And here we are in 2014, and some of that stuff is finally getting through the pipeline, which just goes to the difficulty of getting substantive changes in state law made. But when you're tackling an issue this sensitive, you want to make sure you get it right on the first go and not have to go back and fix it again.
I'm wondering, too, whether you think there's even some personal bad blood between Kathleen Kane and Frank Fina. The things that they have said about each other or implied?
It's certainly not warm and fuzzy. Yes, and Mr. Fina has been pretty sharply critical of Attorney General Kane, and she's been quite defensive. I can't speak to whatever kind of working relationship that they had, but you know, he jumped over to the Philly DA's office not too long after she came on board, so it doesn't seem like there's a lot of love lost between the two of them.
And I should say the Attorney General's office or the DA's office here in Philadelphia is looking into this sting investigation that was called off by the Attorney General, just to add to some of the complexity of this particular issue. But it's interesting, John, is that looking at Kathleen Kane when it came to her unwillingness to defend Pennsylvania DOMA, the court in the end ruled essentially on her side.
Yeah, we had her in for an editorial board meeting at Penn Live a couple of weeks ago, and we asked her if she felt in some way vindicated by Judge Jones's decision, and she sort of, demurred a little bit and said, "Oh gosh, it's not really for me to say," but you could tell that obviously she was well pleased for the decision that she'd made and the ensuing criticism and guff that she'd taken for it. She ended up on the right side of history on that one, and you could tell that she was pretty pleased about it.
I remember talking to you about how the legislature would look at Tom Corbett when he was Attorney General. How does the legislature look at Kathleen Kane?
I think it depends on what side of the party line you happen to be standing on. If you're a Republican and your last name rhymes with Metcalf, you file impeachment motions.
Right.
If you're a Democrat, I think they're on that side of the aisle. I mean, I think there's still a lot who think she's sort of a hero of the progressive movement for having stood up the way she has on guns and gay rights and then on voter ID, and who still think she's tipped for better things. It's something that very much breaks down along party lines.
Well, let's take a very short break. John, we're going to call you back and see if we can get you on a better line. And again, that's John Micek. He's editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Harrisburg Patriot News and for Penn Live. And we are hoping to hear from Frank Fina, former chief deputy attorney general for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, who led the Sandusky investigation. We were told that he would join us in this hour of Radio Times, and we are waiting for his phone call. We're waiting for yours as well. What do you think of this investigation? Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Or are you done with Jerry Sandusky and this investigation? Give us a call. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Lincoln Motor Company, introducing the first ever Lincoln MKC with the all-new available 2.3-liter EcoBoost powertrain for the power and poise to handle any driving situation. More available at Lincoln.com.
The new film Obvious Child is about a stand-up comic in her 20s who gets pregnant after a night of casual sex.
We wanted to make a romantic comedy with a very funny leading lady who has a safe, regrets-free, shame-free abortion.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the film's director, Gillian Robespierre, and its star, Jenny Slate. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
A free and open internet for activist Aaron Swartz, it was a cause worth fighting the government for.
He took a pretty decisive turn towards social justice issues, towards political organizing.
The complicated relationship between hackers and law enforcement told through the life and legacy of Aaron Swartz. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Amtrak, featuring patripsbytrain.com, offering train packages to destinations along Amtrak's Keystone service line. More information on available excursion packages at patripsbytrain.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and just a recap here. Jerry Sandusky is in prison, convicted in 2012 of 45 counts of sexually abusing 10 boys. Attorney General Kathleen Kane had criticized her predecessor, Tom Corbett, when she ran for office, saying that politics had slowed his office's investigation of this case. It took 3 years to charge Jerry Sandusky. She appointed Jeffrey Moulton to investigate the investigation. That report was released on Monday. Said politics was not an influence, but that mistakes were made. And then Kane upstaged her press conference, alleging that two more victims were abused during the three-year investigation, criticizing the prosecutors for not being more aggressive. She has since walked back some of those charges. I should add, as I said earlier in the hour, Jeffrey Moulton declined our invitation on the show. Apparently he's on vacation. Kathleen Kane's office called this morning to say that she would not be able to join us, but John Micek is with us. And again, he's editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and for Penn Live. And we are hoping, fingers crossed, that Frank Fina will be calling into the show. And he led the Sandusky investigation and was criticized pretty harshly by Attorney General Kathleen Kane. We want to know from you about whether you have been following this case, what your takeaway of this case is, if there are some lessons learned, some reforms that could be instituted as a result of the Sandusky case. If you're a Penn State grad, we want to hear from you. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. John, it's always so interesting when talking about certain Pennsylvania issues, how what can feel so intense and live in one part of the state hardly resonates in another part of the state. And perhaps that's just something unique about Pennsylvania. I remember talking with you and probably John Baer about when there was a salary increase for members of the legislature and people were going nuts in certain parts of the state. Philadelphia, not so much. And I wonder whether this is also true with this Jerry Sandusky case.
Yeah, I mean, I remember very well in 2005, it was literally villagers and pitchforks marching on
exactly.
The Capitol. This talk show host who's since retired named Bob Durgin led this crowd of people, and they were shouting a slogan. It was all very, you know, it was all very battleship attempt kind of thing going on. But yeah, I mean, the state. I mean, that's the thing I've learned about Pennsylvania, having lived here for going on 15 years now. It's so large,
yeah,
and so geographically and regionally diverse. That stuff that, you know, really resonates in one part of the state, like the pay raise did in central and southwestern Pennsylvania, or like the Sandusky thing did here in central PA, doesn't get a lot of legs in other parts of the state. Yeah. But that said, though, I mean, the Sandusky story was without a doubt a national story because
Oh, absolutely. It
you know, dealt with this iconic football coach and this culture that he'd built up about victory with honor and these high graduation rates. And Penn State was held up kind of as the platonic ideal of how to run a football program. And then beneath that, you had what appeared to be, you know, an alleged cover-up by university officials to keep this out of sight, and then the handling of this investigation where this, you know, this monster had roamed free on a college campus to molest kids. I mean, there are these threads in all these storylines that made it a really compelling national story. And, you know, you saw that when we were all covering it. I mean, there were international crews wandering around Penn State. You heard Japanese and German spoken. You know, ESPN practically set up a third bureau here. I mean, it was a monstrously large national story, too.
And from the other side, and then I do want to get to some callers here, think of these victims and what it took for them to, in a sense, challenge Sandusky and all that that meant.
That is an extraordinary act of bravery. You know, you hear about that all the time, about victims who are afraid to come forward and challenge somebody in authority because they fear that their stories won't be believed, that how could they, compared to this sort of totemic figure, be believed? And that was the one thing, you know, you heard from Governor Corbett, that if they had been one and done on this and they lost, that they wouldn't be able to make the case that they had. And that's why they moved so systematically and so slowly to build up you know, a critical mass. I guess that's a bad word to use, but a large enough case and an effective enough case to put him away for what is affecting the rest of his life. And I mean, that's the other important thing to remember here, is that we're post gaming the conduct of this investigation and what happened when and what didn't happen when. But, you know, the end result is still that a very horrible person, you know, went away for a very long time. So as a society, we're a lot better off as a consequence.
Well, John, as always, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Again, not the greatest phone line, and that's the only reason I'm getting rid of you.
Sunspots. It must be sunspots, Marty.
It might be sunspots. We're going to buy you a new phone. But, no, I always appreciate you joining us. And, again, John Micek, editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Harrisburg Patriot News and for Penn Live. Joining us now is Kathleen Palm, and she's founder of the Center for Child Justice, a child advocate. And, Kathleen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. So what is your takeaway of this report that came out earlier this week? And there were some recommendations at the end of this report about how to deal with child sexual abuse, but I'm just curious about your overall take.
Well, I think, you know, first and foremost, if we take the politics out of it, and clearly the politics are being fired up, and that's a lot of what the focus is on. But we historically, when it comes to protecting kids, we like to take a look back. We like to do kind of what John just talked about, that post-game analysis. It's really important. And so I think if you take all the politics and all the noise away from this report and the Task Force on Childhood Protection and really drill down on the recommendations, there's value to what the report says. And so we're encouraging people to focus on the value of the report as it relates to protecting every kid going forward versus just about through the Sandusky lens.
And some of the recommendations are keeping a much more complete record of all child abuse allegations, not just the ones that have been proved, but all allegations.
Right. And I think one of the things that we find promising about the report that came out this week is, you know, there's been a whole lot of focus on what the Office of Attorney General did. And again, that's not as though it's inappropriate to look that way. But there were a whole lot of other systems involved as well. And one of the things we have been troubled by since the beginning is that we worked hard in the mid-1990s to say that child abuse is best investigated by a team. It's best to reduce a child's trauma by having a team effort. And still, even today, we still see a lot of counties that don't have a team operational. District attorneys and law enforcement and children and youth aren't always working well. That's not the case in Philadelphia. You do fantastic work there. But in a lot of counties, they struggle to do this. And so the report is promising in that it draws attention to both the local issues that didn't work as well as what it maybe could have done a little differently in the Office of Attorney General.
In fact, it also talks about when there's a transition from one Attorney General's office to another, that there's just a smoother transition and much more information sharing. I'm assuming, Kathleen, that would be something you would support.
Right. I mean, we have said this you know, for the last several years. You know, a lot of these cases are about patterns. You see a pattern whether, you know, if someone has been, a child has been abused previously or is subject to a report, whether it's a perpetrator who resurfaces in another case. And so we have to guard people's privacy, and we shouldn't be having this information willy-nilly out there to the public or even to parties that shouldn't have it. But as it relates to child protection information for prior investigations, it's so critical that in 2008, for the law enforcement, for children and youth to be able to look back and say, whoa, wait, Jerry Sandusky, he's in our database as it relates to an investigation 10 years ago. Because that now stops you in your tracks and automatically starts you on a different path of investigation and a different path for healing for kids and justice than not knowing about a 1998 incident does.
Does 3 years seem like a long time for you to investigate this? That was the start of the investigation until the arrest of Jerry Sandusky.
I think what we're all so troubled by in some ways is that we're troubled by this particular case and timing, but I think those of us who do this work, and myself as a survivor, for folks who have intimate knowledge of what it is to be a survivor, to go through the process, these are tough cases, and it's hard. It's very, very hard on children. They're not always easy to prosecute. And sometimes one of the things, the other side of this is that sometimes those of us who advocate for children get frustrated by how often there's a plea deal. And there's not what we see as full enough justice for that perpetrator because there was a course taken to kind of go more expediently and resolve the case sooner. So in so many ways, that's the one point of this that I think is harder to Monday quarterback. Timing does seem like it took a little too long, but I can probably show you a number of cases right now for children, and that's what we keep asking people to do, is focus on the fact that every day today, there are hundreds of kids moving through our court systems, our child welfare system, where there is not a sense of urgency on their behalf. And so we can look back at the Sandusky case, and well, we should, but what we really should have is an urgency to have the justice system work much more effective from this point forward for every child.
Well, Kathleen Palm, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times, founder of the Center for Child Justice. Thanks so much, and thanks for your work as well.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
You too. And joining us now is Frank Fina, former Chief Deputy Attorney General for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He led the Sandusky investigation. And Frank Fina, we've been waiting for your phone call. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. Do we have...
I literally just ran out of a cord.
I know. You had a busy... I had a busy morning. I appreciate, and we don't have enough time to talk, and I apologize to our listeners for that, but I'm happy to have you with us. I wanted to start with the first thing that was said on Monday when Attorney General Kathleen Kane indicated that there were two victims that were, in a sense, victimized while your office was doing the Jerry Sandusky investigation. I'd like to get your response to that.
Well, I know I and the other career professionals who I was sitting with watching those comments, and we were all stunned, shocked, flabbergasted by that statement.
Do you know who she was referring to?
I have no idea, and that's part of, I guess, what you would call the controversy that has ensued since then. And as I understand it, Ms. Kane has walked back some of those comments,
right,
although I'm not exactly clear what's true and untrue, at least from her perspective. But I can only engage in gross speculation, and I just don't know. I just don't know what she's thinking of or talking about.
Were there any people that did come forward to you to allege sexual abuse by Jerry Sandusky while this investigation was going on?
I think the short answer to that is no. I mean, the long answer is that there were a number of people that we ended up talking to The case was charged with eight actual victims. There were two episodes that were also charged with victims, third parties who observed Mr. Sandusky molesting children. And those victims in those two episodes were never identified, and that would be the Mike McCreary episode and the episode with Penn State University janitors. There were other people we interviewed who claimed to be victims, some of whom we found credible, and people who though did not want to be part of a charging situation. And one of the rules that we operated under was we didn't want to re-victimize people, and we never wanted to force people into testifying or into putting themselves through the ordeal. There were unfortunately other individuals who came forward that for a variety of reasons we did not determine to be credible. I know that in that category there was at least one individual who was very unsure of when the alleged molestation occurred. They have a variety of dates, one of the dates that he did give was in 2009, but that individual, I don't want to go into a lot of details.
No, I hear you.
That unfortunate child, but that was just not determined to be credible.
And I had so many questions for you, but I only have time for one more, and we only have about a minute, Frank Fina. But one of the questions raised was, why did it take 2 years to, in a sense, investigate Sandusky's home? What's your explanation for that?
It's actually, really simple. I mean, it's called probable cause. I mean, in Pennsylvania, you have to have, there's a rather high standard, and it's rather strict. You just can't go into somebody's home because you think there might be evidence there. It's like, you can know a guy named Sammy the Bull, who you're real sure is a hitman for the mafia. That doesn't mean that and you're probably real sure he's got a gun in there in his house and it's an illegal gun. You just can't go in and get it. You just can't go in there because you think something. You have to have probable cause, and the probable cause has to be fresh. It can't be stale.
But that was
a real significant problem for us. And I, for one, was not going to risk this investigation or, its progress on a potentially bad warrant. And that was a decision I didn't hesitate at making. You have to understand, by the time the Attorney General's office got the case files, it was over 6 months since the first victim had reported the alleged abuse. So our information was over 6 months old.
Well, as I said, I have many questions for you, Frank Fina. I do appreciate the fact that you ran over to join us on Radio Times. So perhaps we can talk at sometime in the future. Thanks so much.
Sure, I apologize.
You're a busy guy. We appreciate it. Former Chief
Thank you.
You're welcome. Former Chief Deputy Attorney General Frank Fina, and he led the Sandusky investigation, the fourth of four guests in this hour of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. Stay with us for hour two.